Ekatra Podcast Conversations, for the curious essential knowledge, simplified. Your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekatra AI. Welcome, everyone. Today, we are really getting into something substantial. We're tackling Jordan Peterson's huge academic work, Maps of Meaning, The Architecture of Belief.
It's definitely a deep one. Thanks for bringing this source to us. It's dense, no doubt about it, but I think the insights are incredibly valuable.
Absolutely. And our goal today is really to slice through some of that complexity. We want to pull out the core psychological framework.
Right. The big picture idea of how humans build these meaning systems, the stories, the values, basically how we figure out how to navigate the world.
Sort of like the underlying operating system for belief.
That's a great way to put it, yeah.
And it feels incredibly relevant, maybe more than ever. I mean, why are we as humans seemingly the only creatures that need meaning? Something beyond just, food and shelter.
That's the puzzle, isn't it?
And then there's the dark side. If these belief systems are our maps, how do they sometimes lead to incredible good, like real heroism, but also to the horrors we saw in the 20th century?
That paradox is exactly what Peterson is wrestling with. It's central to the whole project.
Okay, so before we dive into the map itself, maybe a bit about the map maker, Jordan Peterson.
Sure. So he's a Canadian clinical psychologist. He got his PhD from McGill University, and he spent a long time as a professor, taught at Harvard and the University of Toronto, so serious academic background.
But his approach isn't just standard psychology, is it? That's what makes it stand out.
Not at all. He pulls from everywhere. Clinical psychology, yes, but also neuroscience, evolutionary biology, mythology, religion. It's this massive synthesis.
Which is pretty rare these days, trying to connect all those dots.
Very rare. And the book itself, Maps of Meaning, apparently came out of like 15 years of research trying to understand the roots of major ideological conflicts.
Like the Cold War, the Holocaust.
Exactly. He was asking, how could belief systems like Nazism or Soviet communism lead to such atrocities? So it's not just abstract theory.
It sounds like he's trying to almost reverse engineer why we need these deep cultural stories, these myths.
That's a perfect description. Yeah. He's looking at their psychological function. Why do we structure our lives through narrative and belief?
Which brings us right to the core idea of the book.
Yeah.
He basically says that the great myths, the religious stories, the ancient rituals, they aren't just failed science from the past.
Right. They're actually incredibly sophisticated psychological maps, time-tested guides for how to live properly.
How to navigate existence successfully.
Precisely. And this ties into a fundamental human need. We're sort of biologically wired, it seems, to live in a world of meaning, not just objective facts.
And you unpack that a bit. Meaning versus facts.
Well, think about how you actually experience the world. You don't just see random objects. You see things in relation to your goals.
Like that chair is for sitting, that door is an exit, this coffee is necessary.
Exactly. You see a forum for action, tools, obstacles, pathways. And to act effectively in that forum, you need a value system, a map that tells you what's important, what to aim for, what to avoid.
Okay, so that's the map. And the architecture part, the structure of belief.
That's built on this fundamental duality. We live between two huge opposing forces. On one side, you have order.
The known.
Yes. The predictable world.
Hmm.
Culture, tradition, routine, safety, your comfort zone. Peterson archetypally links this to the great father, the king figure, structure.
Makes sense. But then there's the other side.
Chaos, the unknown. This is everything outside that structure.
Right.
The future, surprises, new ideas, emergencies, threats.
Sounds terrifying.
It can be.
Yeah.
But, and this is crucial, it's also the source of all new things, all potential, all creativity, transformative opportunities. Archetypally, this is the great mother, or sometimes the dragon.
So order is structure, chaos is potential.
And potential danger, yes. The great mother creates but also destroys. The dragon guards treasure but can also devour you.
Okay, so the book argues we live between these two.
Constantly. And the key insight is that a meaningful life isn't found just by sticking rigidly to order or by diving headfirst into chaos.
Because too much order becomes...
What?
Stagnant, tyrannical.
Exactly. It becomes dead tradition, unable to adapt. But too much chaos is just dissolution, overwhelming fear, paralysis.
So the sweet spot, the place where meaning happens, is right on the edge.
Right on the border between them. That's where you're engaging with the unknown, learning, adapting, taking what you learn, and using it to update the structures of order. That dynamic edge is where growth occurs.
Let's dig into that a bit more, these maps of experience. You mentioned the world isn't just objects, it's a forum for action. How does this map break down pathologically?
Well, when order goes bad, when it becomes too rigid and resists any change or update, it stops being protective and becomes oppressive. That's the tyrant.
Like a suffocating bureaucracy or a dogmatic belief system that crushes dissent.
Precisely. It sacrifices the individual and the future for the sake of preserving the past structure, even when that structure is failing.
And the pathological side of chaos.
That's when the unknown completely overwhelms you, a total collapse of your framework. Think of a devastating trauma or loss where everything you relied on disappears. That's the abyss. Your map is useless and you're lost in terrifying uncertainty.
So the myths, the maps, are meant to help us navigate between the tyrant and the abyss.
That's the idea. They give us patterns for how to keep order alive and flexible and how to confront chaos without being destroyed by it.
Okay, let's talk about the characters that live on these maps. Peterson uses a lot of Jungian archetypes, right? Like the Great Mother representing chaos.
Yes, and she has that dual nature we touched on. She's the source of all things, creativity, birth, potential. That's the positive side.
But the negative?
The negative is the devouring aspect, the overprotective force that smothers independence, keeps you safe, but prevents you from growing, from facing necessary challenges. Think of the stereotype of the smothering mother who won't let her child face the world.
Got it. And the Great Father, order, also has two sides.
Absolutely. The positive side is wisdom, stability, law, the structure that allows society to function, the established rules and traditions that protect us.
And the negative.
That's when the structure becomes rigid, arbitrary, and crushes individuality. It refuses necessary adaptation. It's the senile king clinging to power or the tyrannical patriarchy.
So we have these massive, potentially dangerous forces of order and chaos. How do we navigate them? This is where the hero comes in.
Exactly. The hero represents the ideal mode of individual consciousness, often symbolized by the logos, which means something like truthful speech and courageous action.
And the hero's job is?
To voluntarily confront chaos, to face the dragon, the unknown, the threat.
This sounds like the classic myths. Perseus and Medusa, St. George and the dragon.
Precisely. Peterson argues these aren't just stories. They're psychological scripts for maturation. By facing the chaos, the hero doesn't just survive, they gain something, the treasure.
And the treasure isn't gold. Psychologically, what is it?
It's new information. It's insight, competence, a better understanding of reality. It's the knowledge needed to fix what's wrong with the current order.
So the hero brings this treasure back to the kingdom.
To revitalize the stagnant order. To update the map of meaning for everyone. This voluntary confrontation with the unknown and integration of new knowledge is the engine of psychological and cultural progress. It's how we adapt.
But there's another path, isn't there? A darker response to the world's problems. He uses Cain and Abel for this.
Yes, a really crucial distinction about responding to suffering. Life is inherently difficult, full of limitations and pain. Abel represents the path of acceptance and noble action.
How so?
Abel accepts the necessity of sacrifice, works diligently, makes the appropriate offerings, and finds meaning despite the hardship. He confronts reality as it is.
Okay, and Cain?
Cain represents resentment. He sees the inherent unfairness and suffering of life, the fact that his sacrifices aren't always rewarded as he expects, and he becomes bitter.
Bitter at God, at fate, at being itself.
Yes. And out of that pride and resentment, he chooses malevolence. He doesn't just fail to do good. He actively chooses to make things worse, to destroy value, to lash out against existence because it's flawed.
So this is where Peterson defines evil not just as ignorance, but as a conscious choice.
A conscious, willful decision to perpetuate suffering and destruction out of resentment for the conditions of life. It's a terrifying, but I think psychologically astute idea.
And what often triggers these intense psychological states, these confrontations with chaos or the temptation towards resentment, he talks about the appearance of anomaly.
Right. An anomaly is something that happens that doesn't fit your current map, your understanding of how the world works.
Like a betrayal by someone you trusted. Or a sudden illness, a job loss that comes out of nowhere.
Exactly. Something happens and your rules, your expectations fail. The map you were using is shown to be incomplete or wrong.
That must be incredibly destabilizing. Anxiety provoking.
Deeply, it's the intrusion of chaos into your order. But Peterson argues this is necessary. It's the signal that your map needs updating.
And the heroic response is to face the anomaly.
Yes. To confront the uncomfortable truth it reveals, figure out what it means, and integrate that new understanding. If you ignore it or retreat,
your map just becomes more brittle, more out of touch with reality.
Right. And eventually it collapses anyway, potentially throwing you into the abyss or making you cling rigidly to a failing tyrannical order. The anomaly is the call to adventure, the call to grow.
Okay, let's try to pull out some core themes here, connect them maybe to everyday experience. First, this idea of mythological truth versus scientific truth. That seems fundamental.
It really is. We're often taught, you know, that science deals with facts and myth is just stories, fiction, obsolete.
But Peterson's saying myth contains a different kind of truth.
A kind of hyper-real truth. It's not about literal objective facts like the boiling point of water. It's about the patterns of successful living, how to navigate the social world, how to deal with suffering, how to orient yourself morally.
Truths about the subjective experience of being human.
Exactly. Deep patterns of behavior and consequence that have been observed and encoded in stories for millennia. So, mythic truth and scientific truth aren't opposed. They just address different, equally real domains.
That helps bridge that gap between, say, religious wisdom and a modern scientific outlook.
I think so. It allows you to respect the psychological wisdom in ancient traditions without having to take them as literal science.
Okay, theme two. This one's tough. The necessity of suffering and sacrifice.
Yeah, this cuts against the grain of a lot of modern thinking, which often aims to maximize comfort and minimize pain.
Peterson's argument is that meaning isn't found by avoiding suffering,
but by voluntarily accepting necessary suffering. By choosing to bear a worthwhile burden, meaning is the antidote to the chaos of suffering, not the absence of suffering itself.
So constantly trying to avoid difficulty, always taking the easy way out.
It leads paradoxically to more suffering in the long run.
Hmm.
Stagnation, weakness, fragility, and often that Cain-like resentment because life isn't easy. Meaning comes from confronting challenges voluntarily.
Makes you think about how we approach hardship in our own lives, doesn't it?
Absolutely. Do you see it as an obstacle to happiness or as the raw material from which meaning is forged?
Okay, third theme, and this loops back to the beginning. The danger of ideological possession.
This is the warning against pathological order, getting completely swept up in a rigid, simplistic belief system.
Like the totalitarian ideologies of the 20th century he was trying to understand.
Exactly. When an ideology becomes your entire map and you refuse to update it or acknowledge anomalies, it becomes dangerous. It provides easy answers, but leads to intolerance, rigidity, and ultimately tyranny. You sacrifice truth for the comfort of certainty.
So the takeaway is the need for intellectual humility, for being willing to be wrong.
Yes. And the courage to update your beliefs when reality contradicts them. To stay on that dynamic edge between order and chaos, rather than retreating into a fortress of dogma.
The book is also filled with these really potent phrases.
Mm.
Let's share a few key ideas that kind of crystallize the message.
Good idea. They stick with you. How about the foundational one?
We are creatures of meaning, not a fact.
Yeah.
That just flips a perspective, doesn't it? Meaning isn't optional. It's primary.
It really is. Then there's the call to responsibility. To stand up straight is to accept the terrible responsibility of life with eyes wide open.
No easy outs there. Meaning requires taking on the burden. Consciously.
Right. And maybe my favorite, capturing that tension we talked about. The dragon of chaos is the eternal adversary, but it is also the source of all treasure.
So the very thing you fear most holds the key to your growth. Don't run from the dragon.
Face the dragon. That's where the gold is hidden. Powerful stuff.
So how does this translate into, like, practical advice? How can you apply this order chaos framework?
Well, think about a personal crisis. Let's say you lose your job unexpectedly. That's chaos erupting into your ordered life.
Okay. Terrifying.
Absolutely. The temptation might be to despair, to retreat, maybe become resentful. But using this framework, you'd reframe it. This is an anomaly, an encounter with the dragon.
So the task is to confront it voluntarily,
yeah.
Like the hero.
Yes. Ask, what does this situation demand of me? What treasure, what new skills, what new understanding, what adaptation can I find in this mess? The meaning comes from the process of confronting it responsibly.
Rather than just being a victim of it.
Exactly. It shifts the locus of control back to you, even in bad circumstances. And maybe on a smaller daily scale.
Well, there's the emphasis on the logo's truthful speech. Acting with integrity.
Right. Choosing what's meaningful in the long run, even when it's difficult now, rather than taking the easy, expedient path of self-deception or manipulation. That's avoiding the path of Cain, the adversary.
And it connects to that famous, sometimes controversial advice.
Clean up your room.
Yeah. Which isn't just about tidiness, is it?
No, it's metaphorical. It means take radical personal responsibility for the domain you can control. Sort out your own life, your own mind, your immediate environment first, before you try to impose order on the wider world. Start with yourself.
It's about building competence and integrity from the ground up.
I think that's the idea. Confront the chaos within your own sphere of influence first.
So, wrapping up, what was the biggest takeaway for you from revisiting this? Anything particularly surprising?
For me, it's really that paradigm shift about myth. Seeing these ancient stories not as primitive failures, but as incredibly sophisticated psychological technology, it gives you a newfound respect for that kind of cultural wisdom. It feels like rediscovering something profound we've almost forgotten.
Yeah, I agree with that. For me, the most powerful and lasting idea is that meaning isn't something you just find, like finding a lost wallet. It's something you forge. You actively create it through your choices, through taking responsibility, through confronting difficulty. It puts the power and the burden squarely on the individual.
It's an empowering perspective, isn't it? It moves away from victim narratives and insists on agency, even in the face of suffering. We build the meaning that sustains us.
A challenging, but ultimately, I think, hope message.
Definitely challenging, but hopeful, yes.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.